This is the Whole Hog Sports Football Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, featuring interviews, analysis, and feature stories on Arkansas football. Now, from Fayetteville, here's your host, Seth Campbell.
The Auburn Tigers scored early and often last week.
Nicks the throw. Throws the deep ball, and Williams wide open! Touchdown, Auburn!
The Razorbacks continue their tour of the Alabama schools as they travel to Tuscaloosa. The Tide are without Tua, but will still look to make easy work of the Hogs before their off week and date with LSU. It's primetime football as the Razorbacks will take on the Tide under the lights at Bryant-Denny Stadium. From Whole Hog Sports, I'm Seth Campbell, and this is the Whole Hog Football Podcast. On today's show, we'll look at the Razorbacks' first victory over the Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll also talk to Alex Byington, writer for the Montgomery Advertiser. Then we'll wrap it up with the most experienced Razorback roundtable out there, as Tom Murphy, Bob Holt, and Scotty Bordelon hand out their grades for the coaching staff. But first, a word from our sponsor, Massage Envy. Massage Envy, voted the top day spa in all of Northwest Arkansas, now is even better with the addition of Jan Marini and Obagi skincare services and products. These exciting new lines are provided, as well as a serum-infused microdermabrasion and chemical peels. Our face is one of the most important features that we have. Proper skincare services and products will enhance and protect your face, while the benefits, well, they could extend a lifetime. No matter your gender, come by either clinic in Rogers or Fayetteville today for your introductory session. If you're a fan of a sports team, you have a hate-hate relationship with the referees. Sometimes they're blind and can't see a play that happened literally right in front of them. Or they have eagle eyes and see stuff across the field. Either way, 99% of the time, things never seem to go your way. Arkansas fans have many of these moments, but some that come to mind recently are, well, the 2009 Florida football game.
I don't get that. Come on, the guy was trying to hit him 20 yards from the play, and he gets called for that? My goodness.
The 2017 North Carolina basketball game that had North Carolina head coach Roy Williams saying afterwards that they were lucky to win. And the 2012 South Carolina game in baseball.
That staff didn't deserve that. I mean, DJ doesn't walk people. You know, he didn't walk five people. Right. And sucks through some really nice pitches that, you know, didn't go our way, which is disappointing. And that's that. You know, you can't really talk about it. And, you know, but like you said, we didn't walk nine people all year in the game. And, you know, especially not when you're throwing the pitchers that we threw tonight.
I mean, how could it be 2019 and Perry Costello is still behind the plate in Omaha? Sorry about that. Whatever the sport, the people in Zebra Stripes always have it in for your team. But there is that 1%. Sometimes a busted play can work out for you. Looking at you, Rams.
But that should have been a penalty. And John Payton is justifiably upset.
While there wasn't as much on the line as the NFC Championship game, the Razorbacks needed some extra help from the officials to notch their first win against the Alabama Crimson Tide in 1995. Take yourself back to 1995. The Razorbacks were rolling with Nolan on the basketball court, but on the football field, the Razorbacks found the SEC tough sledding. Their best season was a 5-win showing by the Hogs in Danny Ford's first year at the helm. Now, in Ford's third year, and the Razorbacks' fourth in the SEC, movement needed to be made. The Razorbacks had an opportunity against the 13th-ranked Tide for a statement win. The season started out bumpy. The Hogs lost their first game to former conference foe SMU 17-14. Then the Hogs returned home and notched their first win of the season against the other SEC newcomer, South Carolina. With a win under their belt, Danny Ford took senior quarterback Barry Lunny Jr. and sophomore running back Madre Hill into Bryant-Denny Stadium.
It's Lee, SEC's Game of the Week. This afternoon, it's the Arkansas Razorbacks taking on the Crimson Tide of Alabama.
The Razorbacks had a 10-3 lead in the first half, but two touchdowns by the Tide took their lead out to 17-10 at halftime. Then in the second half, the miscues started happening for the Hogs. The Razorbacks managed a field goal, but a safety and a botched field goal attempt left the Razorbacks behind 19-13 with time for one final drive. On 3rd-and-24 on his own 29-yard line, Lunny lined up and hit Madre Hill for a 16-yard gain. Helpful, but the Hogs still faced 4th down. On 4th-and-8, Lunny finds Anthony Lucas for a 31-yard gain and a 1st down. Another big play by J.J. Metters sets the Hogs up with a 1st-and-goal at the Alabama 3. The Razorbacks couldn't punch it in on 1st down. They couldn't punch it in on 2nd down. Then, with the 3rd-and-goal upcoming, the Razorbacks made a mistake. They snapped the ball with 12 men on the field. However, the officials didn't notice. And while the Razorbacks couldn't score, it set up a 4th-and-goal from the 3-yard line. That's when the left-handed Lunny rolled left and found Metters on the goal line for the game-tying touchdown.
Lunny. Metters, touchdown, Arkansas!
The Razorbacks might have gotten another break, though. If that play had happened today, it might have been overturned. Lunny threw the ball on the run to a sliding Metters. Metters put his hands underneath the ball, but there is a pretty big possibility that it hit the grass before Metters got it into his hands. However, Lunny and Metters, they don't believe so. Lunny said, quote, if there was an instant replay, they wouldn't have overturned that call because he did get his hands underneath it. Instant replay or not, it's in the books now as a Razorback win. Metters said it best, quote, well, I think Alabama has probably gotten a few calls through the years, so we'll take that one.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. One reason is our great therapists and estheticians. Due to increased demand with our new services in both massage and skincare, Massage Envy is now looking for talented, licensed providers to join our great team. A competitive compensation package and family-like environment are just some of the reasons our providers have worked nearly 10 years with Massage Envy. Looking for a great career? Come by our clinics in Rogers or Fayetteville and apply today.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
He's probably one of the best backs I've seen, you know, wear 5, you know what I mean? So it's an honor to, you know, wear it on Saturdays and get to play in it, and running back too, so it's a big honor.
Running back Rakeem Boyd on the significance of wearing number 5 at Arkansas.
Welcome into the Whole Hog Football Podcast, joined now by Alex Byington, writer for the Montgomery Advertiser. And all right, Alex, first things first, Tua Tagovailoa is out for the game. What will the offense look like with Mac Jones at the helm?
I don't anticipate it being too much different. Obviously, you know, there's a difference in talent level between Tua and Mac. You know, Tua, there's a reason he's the number one quarterback for Alabama and a five-star, you know, recruit and all that, potential NFL draft. Are, you know, possible number one overall NFL draft pick. So there'll be some drop off from that level, but I don't anticipate them actually altering the offense too much. I mean, they're still going to try to move the ball pretty consistently, you know, whether it's, you know, slant screens, kind of short passes like they do with Tua pretty regularly, or a couple passes downfield. I don't anticipate them taking too many big shots just because, again, that arm level talent is a little different with Tua, but I expect them to try to run the ball pretty consistently. Something they haven't really been able to do yet this season, but I think it, you know, throughout the season it's been developing. So that, you know, like I said, I don't see too much change except maybe there might be a few more runs this week.
well, this would look like a good week to get the run going. Arkansas has struggled with that, struggled giving up big plays. And, you know, Najee Harris, man, is a beast out of the backfield. What do you want to see from him going on this week?
I think it'll be important. He's done well the last couple of weeks, really. I mean, had two 100-yard games, I think, now back-to-back. So I think he's starting to kind of get it together. And you know, he's another one of those, you know, five-star kids that kind of had to wait his turn at Alabama. And that's, you know, it's kind of been the case for a lot of guys. But this is his opportunity now, and he's kind of doing, making the most of it. You know, I think if he can come out and kind of run the ball consistency like he's done it the last few weeks, you know, possibly get another 100-yard game kind of thing, I think that's really all anybody wants to see out of him.
Is anybody else expected to get playing time at that quarterback position?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Talia Tagovailoa, Tua's little brother, get some snaps in there, especially if the game kind of gets out of hand, as a lot of people expect it to be. You know, he'll go in there as the normal backup would in those kind of situations and kind of clean things up at the end of the game. They may even have some packages to kind of get him in just to kind of get some opportunities earlier in their game, just to kind of get some, you know, Nick is really big on experience and earned experience in certain situations. So I can imagine that happened, and I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see some more, you know, Wildcat, you know, this weekend, just to kind of give somebody else another opportunity and just to, you know, see how he does. And Slade Bolden, the sophomore wide receiver, has done pretty well in that role and had a touchdown this last game. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're in a similar type situation around the goal line that or in the red zone where they kind of take an opportunity like that. So, you know, I think it'll be kind of an interesting kind of something to watch in that backfield and see kind of where who goes where.
Talked about Talia for just a little bit there. What does he bring to the table that maybe is different than Tua, his brother?
I don't know if there's too much difference. You know, they've been pretty compared pretty similarly most of their time. There were some, I think Talia may not have the, you know, the same kind of arm strength that Tua has. You know, again, it's there's something special about Tua, and there's a reason, you know, NFL scouts are kind of ogling him and have been for years. So, but, you know, supposedly, you know, we don't get to see a whole lot of practice, but what we do, I mean, he throws a nice, you know, tight spiral, you know, has good touch on his passes, is accurate. So I think, you know, if he gets in there and he gets some opportunities to actually throw the ball, you know, we could kind of see some things this weekend.
Now, going over to the other side of the ball, the defense gave up 31 points to an Arkansas team last year that, really, they really couldn't get anything going on offense. And before the Tennessee game, the Tide were giving up 27.3 points a game in SEC play. Now, not that the defense is bad by any stretch, Alex, but what has happened to make a normally stout defense under Nick Saban seem not necessarily beatable, but less polished, I guess?
I think that goes straight to the kind of the youth of that unit. I mean, there's four or five true freshmen that have started on the front seven. So that alone, you know, is guys in there just trying to kind of learn on the fly. I mean, you know, and that's not easy at any level, even, you know, even with the high-rated recruits that Alabama normally brings in, it's one of those situations where, you know, they're still freshmen. They're still 18 years old, 17 years old, trying to kind of understand the system, and they're kind of being put in this position, and it's not easy. And Nick Saban's even said a few times that sometimes, you know, if he goes over to them and they try to make an adjustment because there's something maybe they haven't prepared for or haven't seen, you know, these kids, they have like, they look like deer in headlights, and they kind of have that look on their face that they don't know what they're doing sometimes. So it's, again, it's just it's a growing process, but I think that has a lot to do with it. And some of it's just kind of coming together. You know, guys, you know, there are a lot of new faces on that defense, guys that, you know, went to the NFL and aren't there anymore, had to be replaced. And so, you know, it's youth and guys just trying to learn to get, together and learn how things work. So, I mean, it's going to be a work in progress, I think, really all season. I think they knew that going into it. But I think it's one of those where you put the talent out there, you just hope that eventually, you know, whether it's 5, 10, 12, 15 games in, the guys, the younger guys can kind of put it together. And I think we saw last week that they're starting to do that.
Yeah, they definitely are. Talking right now to Alex Byington, writer for the Montgomery Advertiser. And all right, Alex, before I let you go, you know, I want to ask you, I know coaches will say the team is not looking ahead, but you know, we're both grown men here. Is this team looking ahead to its matchup with LSU in 2 weeks after coming off a bye week after they play Arkansas?
I mean, to a certain extent, it's hard not to. You know, it's one of those, I don't know on Saturday if they'll be looking ahead to LSU. I think, you know, during the build-up, I mean, there's already taught, you know, Tua particularly is already looking ahead to LSU, and he's already said that. You know, he already told several players in the locker room after the game that he'll be back for LSU. So, I mean, to think some players aren't kind of looking ahead and anticipating that matchup, I think is foolish. But for the most part, they do a pretty good job at Alabama, like keeping the players focused on what's in front of them right now, the game that they're playing this weekend, that kind of thing. So in meetings and stuff like that, I don't know if they're necessarily like planning for LSU. So, it's kind of, as long as they keep kind of their focus on what's in front of them. But yeah, I mean, I think at some part they know what's coming in 2 weeks. And so they're anticipating a pretty big matchup, you know, possible 1 versus 2. And they know that, and they're looking forward to that. But I think in the meantime, they know they also have to take care of some. I mean, if they don't take care of business and they allow Arkansas some way of knocking them off, obviously it won't be a 1 versus 2, and then they'll be dealing with some other issues. So, you know, they got to take care of their business this weekend. I think they understand that.
Nick Saban always has a way of getting his teams focused. You know, they haven't lost in a long, long time against unranked teams. All right, Alex, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Coach Morse kind of said it like an egg. It's got to start from inside out. If you crack an egg from the outside, it's dead. If you crack an egg from the inside, it's the bird cracking it itself, the chicken. So it's got to start with us. It's got to start with the players. It's got to start with people believing. It's got to start with just the little things.
Linebacker Grant Morgan on how the Razorbacks can turn this season around and get in the win column. Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast. It is roundtable time. Today we got Scotty Borderline, Tom Murphy, and Bob Holt. Really, what we got, we teased this last week, guys, but because we didn't get to it and we were doing our midseason grades, we got to get to them now. So we got three people to grade, the two coordinators and the head coach. We will start with the offensive coordinator, Joe Craddock. I'll go from left to my right, so I'll start with you, Scotty. What grade do you give offensive coordinator Joe Craddock?
That's a good question. I might go maybe with a D plus or a C minus. No, I think one of the biggest things that's hampering this Arkansas offense outside of just kind of some instability at quarterback is Arkansas's inability to cash in the red zone. I think going into last weekend, Arkansas was had scored only 10 touchdowns on like 23 red zone trips. And they got down there again last week and they just stalled out and they had to settle for a Connor Limpert field goal. And I understand that those red zone troubles all don't, that doesn't all fall on Joe Craddock. I think, you know, I think I asked Ben Hicks after the Kentucky game when I think that was, those problems were really starting to rear its head, especially in big moments. You know, he said that he thinks Arkansas presses a little bit too much in the red zone and they just don't execute. And Rakeem Boyd, I don't think he meant this, but it said it's almost like the offense gives up down there. The field does compress down, and I don't think there's, obviously there's not as much space to work with. Those red zone issues are troubling to me. I think Arkansas does do a good job of getting the ball in the hands of Rakeem Boyd. I would like to see him carry it a little bit more. But, you know, they get the ball going toward Shine O'Grady plenty. And I think that needs to continue. But overall, I mean, this offense just isn't scoring enough points, isn't nearly explosive enough. And when you get in the red zone, you got to cash in. That's been a big problem.
A D-plus from Scotty. What do you have, Tom?
Well, I graded the whole coaching staff and think I gave a D-plus on that. So I'll just keep that across the board for mine. And I just say that they just haven't executed cleanly enough. And when you think about, they had a 16-play drive against Auburn, which is their longest by plays this season. That's them almost at maximum execution. And there have been very few of that kind of drive. And then when they did have that, that was the drive that led to the Connor Limpert field goal. So red zone execution, the lack of being able to be very efficient and execute and complete a drive has been tough on them in the tough games. Now, this is the same staff that had a really nice game plan for Alabama last year. They took advantage of a lot of their aggressiveness. As Chad said, they make their eyes lie to them a little bit. And so I want to see if they can come up with something similar for this game this week. Now, against Auburn, it was almost as if they kind of conceded that it was going to be tough to run on them. And you know, they tried to run some, but they relied on Ben Hicks being able to diagnose what he was going to see and get him in the right protections. And they just weren't able to time after time, take advantage of that versus a D line that was putting so much pressure on them. So, and also I want to also add that I don't feel qualified enough. I don't watch enough film. I don't have enough time to watch enough film to just see what's happening on every snap of every game to tell you. I don't feel qualified enough to tell you that I can judge whether these schemes are good enough or not.
That's fair. All right, Bob, what do you think?
I can't believe these guys wanted to talk that much about the offense. But I'll just give them a straight D, and I don't know how much of it is coaching and how much of it is players not executing. But, I mean, the players are coached to be to execute, you know. So some of that has to fall back on the coaches. When you think about some of the big plays, they've been nullified by alignment issues or formation issues, or, you know, they'll talk about this play was – you know, worked great in practice all week, and then they screwed it up in a game, you know. That's on coaches to a certain extent, I think. And, you know, they haven't settled on a quarterback in 2 years. Maybe that's because they don't have good enough players at quarterback. But, I mean, Joe's the quarterback's coach. So, you know, would like to think they would have settled on somebody. So, you look at the results, it's hard to give them anything more than a D in my book.
Moving on now to John Chavis, a man with experience in the SEC coming in, but – some were maybe a little skeptical of Chavis. You know, his offense, his defense didn't work out very well at A&M with really talented guys. We'll start with you, Tom. What grade would you give Chief?
Same as I had before. And again, can't tell you enough about what they're facing and how they scheme up against it to say whether or not the schemes are right. But I thought there's been a couple of games they had good plans. A&M game, I think they had a good plan. The Portland State game they did, and frankly against Auburn, as John Chavis pointed out Monday, they didn't fill one run gap on the 52-yard run by Cam Martin, and then otherwise they held them down for a while until at the end, and they were on the field a lot. So I think both sides of the ball are working at a little bit of a depth deficit and impact player deficit. I mean, there's some, but they've had two plays break open on them against Portland State and Colorado State where they're just breakdown plays, and they gave up touchdowns on both those. So that's what my grade is, and we'll see if they can improve the rest of the season.
What do you think, Bob?
I'll stick with a D. I mean, obviously, John Chavis is an accomplished coach. He's probably one of the best SEC defensive coaches, you know, assistant coordinators of all time. But he just hadn't worked very well here, and a lot of that's talent, lack of talent, lack of experience. But you think about, like, the San Jose State game where they shut down that team the whole second half except when they absolutely had to stop at the end. San Jose State went down, like, went 75 yards in a minute or something. You think about the Kentucky game. That quarterback they had, that receiver, Lynn Bowden playing quarterback, he's an ultra-talented guy, but they couldn't really make, you know, they couldn't stop the run, even though when they knew it was coming. And once again, after taking the lead late, they gave up a big drive really fast. So I just think, and then Auburn, they played really well, I guess, for about 30 minutes from the second, third quarter, and they just collapsed at the end, whether that's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, whatever. I don't know, but they just can't seem to get stops when they really need them.
Yeah, I'll stick with the same grade too. I just see this defense not executing at a level that would lead you to believe that they're making great strides. I know the middle part of the game against Auburn was probably as good as Arkansas's defense has looked all year. You know, you're holding down a really effective quick strike offense. You get a fourth down stop. You limit Auburn to a missed field goal after the horrendous fake punt the other day. They looked good for stretches, but then again, like both of these guys mentioned, you know, just too many. They just collapsed and folded in the later stages of the third quarter and in the fourth quarter. Just I see too many explosive plays, too many busts, not enough execution. And Arkansas's defense, I looked up yesterday's. Giving up 192 yards on the ground per game, and then the secondary kind of got exposed the other day by a pretty good freshman quarterback and some really speedy receivers. That's really Arkansas's kryptonite.
So D's all around. The defense gets a lot of D's on their grade. All right, guys. The head hog, Chad Morris. What do you think, Bob?
I guess I'll give him a D also. I mean, you know, Chad came in here promising an explosive offense. Thankfully, nobody's mentioned left lane, hammer down, whatever all those slogans were in a long time. You know, I go back to things like, I think, was it the Portland State game where they had the bad clock management at the end of the half? I mean, you got Chad signaling for them to kill the ball, you know, and you've got assistant coaches under signaling to run a play. So that's just bad coaching, you know, miscommunication, whatever. And Chad took, you know, he took responsibility for that, as he should have. And then you think about that fake punt they ran, just, you know, just a horrible play. And just, yeah, I get trying to do something to spark them, but that just was not good. I mean, and I don't think that worked very well in practice either, so I'm not sure what made them think it was going to work well. Well, and Auburn snuffed it out. I mean, Auburn was not coming in. They were ready for it. And so that even if Warren got the ball, I think he was going to get splattered. So maybe it was a good thing he didn't get the ball. So he might have got a concussion or something. I'm serious. And then, you know, you think about Chad talking about how he could sense a Kentucky that Nick Starkle didn't have it early, and yet he played him three quarters. You know, and he talked about after the whole San Jose State game, which, I mean, that was really a bad job of coaching that. It had to have been because that team was very ill-prepared to play San Jose State. And Chad talked after the game about he could tell in pregame warm-ups something was off and they weren't being serious enough to me. Guys were laughing. He said something to a couple of guys, you know, captains or leaders, let's tighten it up. Well, I mean, I'm not a coach, obviously, but to me, I would have read the whole team the Riot Act or something. But, I mean, so he sensed that before, and yet, you know, they still laid an egg. So I think a lot of things we're not privy to, but I don't doubt his commitment, his effort. I'm sure he's not getting any sleep, but I mean, just not a good overall look right now.
What grade are you giving Chad, Scotty?
I think I might take a page out of Matt's playbook last week and give him an incomplete to this point. Obviously, no one is satisfied with the way the first half of the season and last Saturday went. I mean, there's so many different things that you can point to. I mean, you got guys decommitting, guys in your next recruiting class decommitting, your best offensive lineman decommits after after the Kentucky game, and then Martavius French decommits, and so that's not good as far as like the future is concerned. With this current team, I mean, you've had Devon McClure leave, Devin Bush has left, so you kind of wonder what the locker room is like. You know, Bumper Pool and those and Sosa and all those guys can come into the post game and say the locker room's staying together, but we don't really know that for sure. The on-field product doesn't necessarily say that that is the case. That may be a stretch to say, but it's kind of what I'm thinking. But I give the incomplete because I think Arkansas does have a chance without Tua to go in and kind of show just a little bit of grit and that they aren't going to back down, even though that Alabama's top-ranked team in the country and has been largely unstoppable to this point. They've got a chance to go in there and you know, just kind of lay it all on the line, play with nothing to lose. And then the last month or so of the season, they've got some winnable games there. So we'll see if they can take a little bit out of this weekend, take some positives and carry it into the last month.
Yeah, a lot of people took exception to Club Dub. I did not have as much of a problem with that after they had beaten Colorado State. It's just a program that needed some good things to happen, to have some fun and joy. So I really don't begrudge Chad Morris for the Club Dub situation. Now, I don't know how you rationalize how they lost to San Jose State. I mean, it just did not seem prepared on both sides of the ball. And that comes back to coaching. And I think there's not enough practice time in the week for them to cover all the stuff they need to cover. And thus, your fake punt play doesn't look like it's, you know, like it's been repped enough at full speed to know, for Sam Lloyd to know exactly where Devion Warren's going to be. That's why some of their key, you know, some of their fourth down stuff, some of their red zone stuff, doesn't look like they've rehearsed it to the point where they execute it without flaws. And so it was a big challenge for Chad Morris. I don't know. I can't tell you right now that he's not the solution or that he is the solution at Arkansas. It's just that we have enough evidence this year that you know, they've had some failings. And I think it's very incumbent upon this staff for the next five games to show that they are competitive, that the locker room is still together, that there's some promise for the future. They played some young guys last week, and I think we're going to see more of it in the last five games. They got to come out with a W from one or two of these last games, I think, to show enough promise that, hey, there's promise in this future with this staff.
All right, guys, good stuff there from giving your grades for the offense, defense, and the head coach. All right, we're going to go now a little bit of Alabama prep. The Crimson Tide, they are without Tua. What do you want to see from the Razorback defense? And then on the flip side, the Razorback offense, you know, had a pretty good showing against Alabama last year. What do you want to see from them as well? We'll start with you, Scotty.
As far as what I want to see from Arkansas's defense this weekend, is just not make Mac Jones look like a superstar.
Which has been really hard for the Arkansas defense.
Yeah, Arkansas's got an uncanny knack of a lot, like giving up like career days, season best, that kind of thing. And Mac Jones, I think, is going to be making his first start of his career. And, you know, I don't think that they're going to put just a whole lot on his plate. You know, and you really don't have to. I mean, you think about it, they've got a stable of about five running backs that you're probably going to see on Saturday. And then they've got by far the best receiving group in the country, Jerry Jeudy and Jalen Waddle and Henry Ruggs and Devontae Smith. Like, you can go down the line. Like, he doesn't have to go out and just play spectacular. But, you know, he can complete a six-yard pass to Devontae Smith. He can take 80 yards. So I just don't think Arkansas they just don't need to make him look like a superstar, and they've got to do better stopping the run, and that's a really tall task going into Alabama.
It's a real quandary. I think Alabama's going to really try to push the run in this game and get the ball on shorter routes to that great receiving core Scotty just listed. Tackling those guys in space is going to be key. I don't think they're going to try to run a whole lot of deep, you know, complicated things. But it puts you in your DBs in a bind. Do you come up and try to jam them? And if you do that, are they going to get over the top because they're faster? So that makes it really tough. And then on the other side of the ball, Arkansas did a great job last year of getting their ends and their linebackers to commit to certain things and leaving the tight end open on some hot routes. They threw screens to the backs, And that's how they got a lot of their yards. I mean, think about this. Rakeem Boyd ran for 100 yards on them last year. Shane O'Grady caught 2 touchdown passes, and the tight ends tore him up. I think he had 9 catches in that game. I think Nick Saban and his staff are going to be ready for those types of things. So Arkansas has to be able to make the adjustment and go on to the next thing, whatever that might be. And that's my take on offense and defense for this game.
What do you say, Bob?
Yeah, it sounds weird to say this, that you want to force Mac Jones to beat you through the air, because, you know, just remember this kind of last year's game, just an endless loop of Alabama receivers, you know, getting the ball in space and running free, and Arkansas, you know, defensive backs hopelessly trailing them. But what you don't want to see if you're Arkansas is, you know, Alabama line up and go 75 yards on a handoff on the first play. I think they really need to try to load up against the run and then try to make this redshirt sophomore who's never started before beat you. And I don't have any doubt Alabama's still going to score a lot of points, but I think you got to try to make the new quarterback beat you and not the running game. But it's a tall order either way. And offensively, yeah, I mean, I was looking back at the stats, and Ty Story probably played his best game as a Razorback considering the level of competition. He ran the ball really well. He threw the ball really well. Like Tom said, they did some things to get Alabama some misdirection things that got Alabama a little out of sync. I know Saban was really ticked off after that game for giving up 31 points, even though they won by 34, I guess it was. But, and of course, now Ty Story's not here. Yeah, you don't know if Ben Hicks can maybe pull some of that off. But, yeah, the offense, you just like to see them not try any crazy trick plays, but just maybe show some wrinkles, you know, to try to do something to take advantage of Alabama's youth, because I think they're starting 4 guys. 4 freshmen on defense. They're only really good freshmen, but you like to think maybe they could do some things to trick those guys and get them snookered on some things.
And I think Tom made a good point too. I think Alabama staff has been probably watching what Arkansas attacked them with last year a little bit, and they're probably going to be sitting on that and prepared for it. So I think it's a big week for Arkansas staff to kind of counter with some new things that maybe Alabama hasn't seen yet that might work.
You know, Bob also mentioned the first play. Alabama scored on a touchdown the first 2 plays, or for the first play the past 2 years. So that's also something to look out for. And the Razorbacks have given up big plays in the first drive as well. So those 2 things don't really add up to being well for the Razorbacks. All right, moving on. Now, talked about Ben Hicks. Does Ben Hicks give you the best chance to win this game in the games moving forward? We'll start with you, Tom.
It's tough to say. I mean, I think he keeps them safer. But he's not – it's just like what we've talked about all year. Starkel gives you the higher possibility of completing a 30-yard deep route or 40-yard deep route, and Hicks doesn't give you that chance as much. But he gets you in the right protection better. So I'll say for this game, because Alabama can do some complicated things, that the protections are going to have to be good to keep him on his feet. But I would give Starkel a series, and I think I would have given Starkel a series last week just to see how we look. And I think the fans are going to demand that at some point that you take a look at KJ Jefferson. And I don't know if that's going to be this week, but it needs to be. There's 5 games to play 4 for him.
What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, I agree. Starkel's got, you know, he's more of a risk-reward guy. I think you can get a much higher reward with him, but obviously when you look at all the interceptions he's thrown, there's a greater risk. And you can just imagine how many interceptions not just him but any quarterback would throw under duress against Alabama. So they're probably better off starting Ben Hicks. He's probably a little safer guy in a game like this. But I mean, they could probably play Johnny Unitas in his prime and not have a shot to win this game. But yeah, I think Nick Starkel gives them a better chance. But he also, if you're in a game, you know, just like San Jose State, you know, I mean, all those picks, you know, it's just and then he obviously had a horrible game against Kentucky for whatever reason. And you know, it's funny, I was one of those guys saying earlier, how can you not play Starkel? How can you not play Starkel? Then you watch Kentucky and you're going, how can you not play Hicks? How can you not play Hicks? So it's a big dilemma for the coaching staff.
Yeah, I don't know that Ben gives you the best chance to like go out and take a game or win a game, maybe steal one, but he also, you throw him out there, I don't think he's going to absolutely lose it for you as far as, you know, making mistakes and throwing picks. And I charted him with, just one interceptable pass the other day, and he threw his first interception against Auburn in the third quarter. I think that was his first pick in like 108 attempts or something like that. but he's not going to, I don't think, lose you the game. I don't think he's going to go out and win it for you either. He does bring some intangible things, like Tom said, who get Arkansas into some advantageous protections and slide protections and get guys lined up right more often than not. I'm with Tom too. I think we'll see Nick Starkle a little bit in this Alabama game, and I kind of wonder about Ben's health too, because I think he took a shot from an Auburn defensive lineman on a blitz, or maybe it was a linebacker on a blitz on the pick that he threw, and he's favoring that left shoulder. And despite favoring that left shoulder, they still left him in, and they didn't throw Nick in there. So we don't. That makes me believe that Nick wasn't really in the equation on Saturday. So that's a long-winded way to say I don't know.
I think Hicks took several shots in that game. Mm-hmm. And that one maybe the most to his shoulder, but he got hit.
Mm-hmm. They didn't. Tom, you alluded to this a little bit, but you know the fans are curious, and you know it seemed to almost be calling for KJ Jefferson to get some playing time. So what are your thoughts on KJ getting into the game? We'll start with you, Bob.
You talking about this game or any game?
Just on down the line.
Well, yeah, and I think it would behoove them to play him because you want to see what this guy can do. You've got the rule where you know a guy can play four games, but so yeah, he definitely needs to get in there. You know, they need to work out a package for him. I think you know, assuming this game gets out of hand, which it's hard to imagine any other scenario, why not put KJ Jefferson in? You know, in the fourth quarter, he's probably going to be playing Alabama starters anyway. You know, maybe let him see what he can do. Even if he struggles. Hey, I remember that happened to Brandon Allen. He turned out okay, I thought. And but then the dilemma they're going to face moving forward is, you know, Mississippi State's probably the most winnable SEC game they have left. It's at home, and Mississippi State hasn't been real good this year. So, you know, it might be hard to play him against them. And then West Kentucky, it sounds crazy. That's a must win. I mean, if you lose to West Kentucky, you know, fans might burn the stadium down or something. I mean, you lose to West Kentucky, Ty Story. I mean, the guy they basically said, you're not good enough. He leaves, and he comes back and beats you. That's a must win. You know, and so then it's hard to play KJ. To me, it's hard to play KJ Jefferson in those two games. And then late in the game at Missouri, late in the season against Missouri, that may be a game where they're still trying to get an SEC win. So I think they need to play him. But the dilemma is there aren't that many games maybe left where you feel like, well, let's take a look at this guy, you know.
What do you think, Scotty?
Yeah, curious to see KJ, because we get questions on our message board all the time about how KJ's looking and how he's progressing. And a couple weeks ago, someone asked, I think it was Joe Craddock, how KJ's progressing. And they were talking, I think Joe was kind of speaking to some of the mechanical flaws in his throwing motion and just, you know, the way he sets his hips, opens his hips and his footwork and that kind of thing. So I do think he's still got a ways to go before he can be like ultra effective. And a quarterback that might fit the system. But, yeah, I definitely like to see it. Like, if the game gets out of hand Saturday, I don't see why you don't put him in late. And obviously you don't want to injure the guy, but I think you let him on the field and you let him get some of that game experience, but you keep it simple while also seeing kind of what he can bring to the table. I definitely want to see him. I just, like, kind of like Bob, I don't know exactly when you do that.
I think there's been so much pressure on these coaches to win games, and you felt like you got to put your best players out there to try to win games. And I don't think you could make the argument that KJ Jefferson would put you in the best position to win games to this point. He's been on the scout team, and I think that they're going to have a package for him at some point, and it may be close to being applicable. They used Treylon Burks as a Wildcat quarterback last week. Didn't really work that much. But there's so many things you have to do as the quarterback. You have to do pre-snap diagnosis. You have to make the checks at that point. And then you have to do post-snap if you don't see what you think you're going to see, if something different happens. So much goes into it. And I think he's going to have the physical tool. He can run and all those things. Sure, his passing accuracy needs to pick up. But I think in these last four games in particular, they need to show that there's a package with him and that, hey, look, people, this is what our future looks like. This is the kind of quarterback who is the ideal type person to run this system. And I would like to think that they're going to have KJ in position to do that this last month of the season.
All right, wrapping up here, guys. Last question. Three SEC games are left after Alabama. And Bob mentioned that, you know, the one that's not is Western Kentucky, and that's almost a must win. He said it is, actually, and I think he may be right. But the Razorbacks, you know, they seem to have a chance in two of the three SEC games left. Which game would you pinpoint as the Hogs' chance to break their SEC losing streak? We'll start with you, Scotty.
Obviously, I think it's Mississippi State, and I know that's tough because you're going to be kind of reeling, you know, maybe mentally, emotionally, and physically after likely taking a beating at Alabama. But Mississippi State, remember, I think I wrote yesterday, they're 1-3 in the SEC, and I think they've lost three straight. So, I mean, it's a team that, you know, doesn't have it all figured out either. I think they've had some quarterback juggling, I think, too. So the one thing I think Mississippi State does have going for it is running back. I think it's Kylan Hill. Last I looked, he was up toward the top of the league in terms of rushing yards, so he's going to be a problem. But that game is at home. That's homecoming. Got a chance for a pretty solid crowd that game, and I think that probably is as good of a chance as Arkansas is going to have. And no offense, Bob, Missouri hasn't looked good on the road this year, so kind of night and day playing at home and on the road. So you know, I'd probably go Mississippi State 1 and Missouri 2.
I agree with those. The Mississippi State game, those guys were really physical in Arkansas. I mean, it was surprisingly one of the most physical beatings they took last year was in that game. The defense really got after them. So I think it's going to be a real tester for this coaching staff, no matter what happens against Bama, to regroup the team and have them prepared with a game plan that can win the game. They're going to face Kylan Hill. They're going to face a running quarterback in Tommy Schrader, who's a good one. So that's going to test their edges like many of these other teams have. But can they put together a game plan after all they've been through to win that game at homecoming with probably a better crowd than the Auburn game, you'd think, with so much riding on it? Because I think the coaching staff feels like if we don't deliver a win or two down the stretch, you know, our jobs are on the line here. And so I think you're going to see a maximum effort in the Mississippi State game.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say they're not going to win at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. And, yeah, on paper, I think the Mississippi State game is the most winnable because State has struggled. You know, Joe Moorhead came out last week and talked about how the SEC can be soul-crushing. I mean, he's a guy that never coached in the SEC. Not that State's, you know, I mean, they went 8-5 last year, you know, so it's not like they're terrible. But, you know, you wonder if he's kind of going through some growing pains like Chad is. You know, he'd been a head coach at Ford, and that's a little different than being a head coach in the SEC. And then that's a game here in Fayetteville. And like these guys said, you know, you hope for good weather and maybe a decent crowd. And then Missouri just, you know, you think they're getting the top 25 and they lose to Vanderbilt, which is just lost to UNLV, not just lost, got crushed by UNLV. So that'll probably be a winnable game in Little Rock. You wonder what the Little Rock crowd will be like. But yeah, I think these guys 1-15 may not look very good, but 0-16, that's just such an anvil around your neck. I think it's just hard to recruit to 0-16. It's hard to have any fan hope with 0-16. I mean, you just wonder if the coaching staff could survive that. So I think they got to win Western Kentucky. Like I said, I just think that's what sounds crazy. That's a must win, you know. And then they really need to win an SEC game, I think, to provide some hope for the future, because I think right now I think a majority of the fans have given up hope.
Well, we hope that you enjoyed this roundtable. That's Bob Holt, Tom Murphy, and Scotty Bordelon. You make sure to check out all of their stuff on wholehogsports.com. They're going to get you prepared for this Alabama game and the other games on down the line. So make sure that you tune in for their stuff. And we'll see you guys back here next week. Thanks so much for joining us. The Whole Hog Sports Football Podcast is produced and edited for Airship by me, Seth Campbell. Special shout-outs to Alex Byington, Tom Murphy, Bob Holt, and Scotty Bordelon. You can read more from Alex Byington at themontgomeryadvertiser.com. You can read more from Scotty, Tom, and Bob on wholehogsports.com. Thank you to our sponsor, Massage Envy. By supporting them, you are supporting us. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. Subscribing and sharing is one of the best ways to let your friends know about this podcast and for us to grow. Theme music is by Silent Partners. I'm Seth Campbell for Whole Hog Sports. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you back here next week.